The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
Welcome to the Majority Report's continuing coverage of the House Intelligence Committee impeachment, public impeachment hearings. We have spent now the first 2.5 hours watching testimony from George Kent and from Bill Taylor. Bill Taylor, the acting ambassador to Ukraine. George Kent, a State Department official. We heard their opening statements, their testimony, brief questioning by Adam Schiff, and then full questioning by Goldman, the Democratic counsel. And everything that they said, more or less, has been outlined in the private depositions that were given by these two witnesses that were released sometime last week. However, there was new information that was brought to this public testimony by Bill Taylor. Remember, Bill Taylor was basically the Serpico figure. He was the one guy from the outside. And he described when he came on board, he is a career diplomat, or neither a career diplomat nor career civil servant, but he's served in both capacities. He served for, I don't know, every president since Reagan, apparently. He was brought on board. He said very early on, he saw that there was a regular channel of U.S. foreign policy and an irregular channel. The regular channel was all the people who should be working in U.S. foreign policy there. The irregular channel included Sunderland, who was the EU ambassador, including Volker, who was sort of this like floating non-paid ambassador, Rick Perry, Secretary of Energy, Mick Mulvaney, acting chief of staff, acting OMB head, and as well, keep that up just for my own purposes, and also Rudy Giuliani. And he said, for a while, it appeared like these regular channels and the irregular channels were pursuing the same goals. And at one point, he realized they were diverging. And this all becomes more and more of a revelation till it culminates in his full realization that the president is withholding both security assistance and a meeting at the White House from Ukraine in return for a public statement by the president of Ukraine that they were going to be investigating the Bidens and the 2016 elections and et cetera, et cetera. The only new piece of information that we have from this, everything's been sort of like, explicated and drawn out. And I will critique, some of this testimony in a moment. But the only thing that's new, absolutely new information, are these following three paragraphs. Maybe we can put these up if you have them. Last Friday, a member of my staff told me of events that occurred on July 26th. While Ambassador Volker and I visited the front, this member of my staff accompanied Ambassador Sundland as Ambassador Sundland met with Mr. Yermak. Yermak is the assistant to Zelensky, the Ukrainian president. Following that meeting, in the presence of my staff at a restaurant, Ambassador Sundland called President Trump and told him of his meeting in Kiev, or as they call it, Kyiv, apparently. The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sundland about the, quote, investigations. Ambassador Sundland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sundland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sundland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for. At the time I gave my deposition on October 22nd, I was not aware of this information. I'm including it here for completeness. As the committee knows, I reported this information through counsel to the State Department's legal advisor, as well as to counsel for both the majority and minority on the committee. It's my understanding the committee is following up on this matter. And in fact, it's been announced today that impeachment investigators announced two new closed door depositions. David Holmes is expected to testify in closed session Friday, November 15th. Mark Sandy is expected to testify in closed session on Saturday, November 16th. Not sure exactly what their positions are, but presumably one of them may very well be the staff member that he's talking about. Holding it on a Saturday. They want to get this done quickly. Who was it, Brendan, who was it that said from the Senate, in what forum did he say that we have a notion of what the timeline's going to be? Okay. Senator Burr, Richard Burr from North Carolina, in a some type of like interview forum or something, said that he anticipates, 6 to 8 weeks of a trial in the Senate. That is 3 weeks longer, I think, than Bill Clinton's. Again, this is problematic for two senators who are running for president of the United States. That would be Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. This is not problematic for, let's say, Pete Buttigieg or Joe Biden. Now, he says could last 6 to 8 weeks, so we don't know. But all this is relevant as the Democrats try and race through this. Now, there's also a lot of stuff that came out, revelations in the trial that's going ongoing that in many ways is like even a bigger deal. The trial of Roger Stone, where it's quite clear the president lied in his written testimony to Robert Mueller. Quite clear. Based upon the fact that apparently the Trump campaign knew as early as April of 2016 that WikiLeaks had information. Now, we're going to head into the testimony in a second. Let me just tell you a couple of things, get some ads out of the way here, and then we will go further into this. And we will play some clips. We may do like a roundup at the end of this. And if so, we'll put it to the front end of this podcast or whatever. We'll see. But one of today's sponsors is BetterHelp. They're giving our audience 10% off their first month when you go to BetterHelp.com/MajorityReport. BetterHelp gives you access to your own fully licensed and accredited therapist via phone, chat, or video. When you sign up, they match you with a therapist based on your specific needs, and you'll be communicating with that therapist in less than 24 hours. If you're not happy with your therapist, you can switch to a new one at any time for any reason for no additional charge. They have over 3,000 licensed therapists from all over the country, so they have therapists with specialties that may not be even available in your area. So this is a great opportunity for you if you can't travel or whatnot. You don't have to drive to an office. You don't have to wait around in a waiting room. You can do everything from the comfort of your own home or, like I say, on the road. BetterHelp also tends to be more affordable than traditional in-person therapy, and they have financial aid options if you qualify. They're giving everyone in our audience 10% off your first month when you go to BetterHelp.com/MajorityReport. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MajorityReport. Also, stick around. We're just going to resume coverage in a moment. They're not back into the chambers yet. But I should tell you that Saul and I this weekend have a date with our new Bits Box. When it comes to preparing your children for the future, and frankly, in my instance, it's really just I want to have fun with Saul. And before he starts getting into we don't give him too much access to the iPad. Handheld devices are the worst. And so I'm psyched to get him involved in the computer to understand it. Part of this reason is for years I've been working with Kyle Shank, who's set up this whole system that we have here. And he was exposed to a computer very early on doing this type of coding. And the guy's a genius. I'm not saying that made him a genius, but I want my son to be a little bit like Kyle. Not exactly like Kyle. I want him to be a little bit cooler. And it is so easy to get started with Bitsbox. It's a monthly subscription box that teaches real computer coding to kids ages 6 to 12. Every month, a beautiful set of app creation projects arrive on your doorstep. Each box comes with a new theme, like animals or robots. If you have a kid this age, you know animals and robots. It's basically the only two things that are relevant. Kids follow the instructions on the project cards and type in the app's code on Bitsbox website. Within minutes, kids can build their first app, working app, and then play with it on any smartphone or tablet. So this is cool. Our listeners can get $25 off of any Bitsbox subscription of $50 or more by going to bitsbox.com/majority, entering the promo code majority at checkout. Saul and I have a date to do this weekend, and mine just came the other day, and it's going to, he's super psyched. It's $25 off plus free shipping at bitsbox.com/majority, promo code majority. Bitsbox, BITSBOX.com/majority. Use the promo code majority to order Bitsbox today. Your kids are going to love the coding, and you're going to give them an important skill that's necessary for a successful future and get them engaged in just building stuff and understanding like what's under the hood of the stuff that they're going to be engaged in. This was not an opportunity for me as a child, and I resent it.
I don't know how any technology works that I use.
I mean, and it's a little bit frustrating, isn't it?
I don't really think about it much.
No. All right. Well, then good for you.
I put my gaming PC together for getting all the components separately. Boom. And it's one of the more fulfilling things I've done.
Not only that, it's also just, I think the general idea of you can build something is a great lesson for kids. All right. Now let's get back to the hearings. They're about to start in a moment. I should tell you that there was a significant portion of the first half of the hearing. And I don't know how much these witnesses, and maybe the reason why they brought in Kent today, was supposedly to set the stakes of how important our Ukrainian policy is. Frankly, I think that was a mistake. And just for the moment, let's say I'm agnostic about our Ukrainian policy. Okay. You don't want to have to justify U.S. foreign policy in this regard to make the case for impeachment. All you need to say is, was it official U.S. foreign policy? So there's some understanding at a baseline as to what constitutes regular foreign policy and irregular foreign policy. And when Donald Trump says, I'm owed, you owe me something, what's he talking about? Is it something in the context of U.S. foreign policy? Is he just using I because he can't refer to the United States as something different from himself? Or is he literally mean me, Donald Trump, my political prospects, as opposed to U.S. foreign policy interests? Now, but they wanted to make it a little bit more, the increase the stakes, I guess. I just don't think that was relevant. But nevertheless, the Bill Taylor testimony ended up being very compelling. I mean, this guy just comes across as a very, in fact, here it is. Here's Bill Taylor being asked the question by the attorney. What's his first name? Goldman? Daniel Goldman, the House counsel, or I should say the majority House counsel. And here he's being asked the question, have you ever seen another example of foreign aid conditioned upon the political or personal interests of the president of the United States? This is, frankly, one of the big things that the founding fathers were a little worried about. Maybe the most direct one, right? Because we have a lot of things the founding fathers were worried about that don't make sense in modernity on some level. This one is pretty spot on.
I meant that because of the importance of security assistance that we had just described and had a conversation with the chairman, because that was so important, that security assistance was so important for Ukraine as well as our own national interest, to withhold that assistance for no good reason other than help with the political campaign made no sense. It was counterproductive to all of what we had been trying to do. It was illogical. It could not be explained. It was crazy.
When you say all of what we were trying to do, what do you mean by we?
I mean that the United States was trying to support Ukraine as a frontline state against Russian attack. And again, the whole notion of a rules-based order was being threatened by the Russians in Ukraine. So our security assistance was designed to support Ukraine. It was not just the United States. It was all of our allies.
When you reference help with a political campaign in this text message, what did you mean?
I meant that the investigation of Burisma and the Bidens was clearly identified by Mr. Giuliani in public for months as a way to get information on the two Bidens.
And that investigation, at the very least, was mentioned by President Trump in the July 25th phone call with President Zelensky. Is that right?
As we now know, yes. On September 25th, that transcript was released.
Ambassador Taylor, in your decades of military service and diplomatic service representing the United States around the world, have you ever seen another example of foreign aid conditioned on the personal or political interests of the President of the United States?
No, Mr. Goldman, I have not.
There you have it. Now we are resuming we're back to the live coverage here. Devin Nunes now, I believe, has the floor. Have they started? Let's just hear some sound. There we go.
Committee will come back to order. The chair now recognizes the ranking member and minority counsel for 45 minutes.
Thank you. The call summary for which the Democrats want to impeach President Trump is dramatically different from their nefarious depiction of.
Now, should remind you, the call summary has not come up once
two leaders who
in the context of anything we've heard for the past 3 hours. The
Democrats claim this call demonstrates extortion, bribery, and a host of other monstrous crimes being committed against President Zelensky. Yet President Zelensky himself insists there was nothing improper whatsoever about the conversation. Indeed, the routine nature of the call helps to explain why, in this committee's last public hearing, Democrats recited a fictitious version of the call instead of reading the actual transcript. The Democrats depicted the president saying, quote, "I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent, understand? Lots of it, on this and on that," unquote. The transcript did not show President Trump saying anything remotely like that. The president did not ask Ukraine to make up dirt on anyone. But the Democrats are not trying to discover facts. They're trying to invent a narrative. And if the facts they need do not exist, then they'll just make it up.
This is pretty stunning because he is basically characterizing.
Not only does President Zelensky deny.
Completely mischaracterizing what we've heard for 3 hours. There's been no talk of that call. But this is stuff that's going to end up on Fox News tonight, and that's the way that people are going to presume this all went down.
Security assistance for them. Furthermore, as the ambassador testified, these holds occur from time to time. Both he and Ambassador Volker were confident the delay would be lifted. And in fact, military aid to Ukraine has actually substantially improved since President Trump took office. Ambassador Taylor testified that President Trump was the first president to see that Ukraine was afforded Javelin anti-tank weapons. This was a very strong message that Americans are willing to provide more than blankets. This was the Obama administration's approach. Note this important fact. The security assistance was provided to Ukraine without the Ukrainians having done any of the things they were supposedly being blackmailed to do. So we're supposed to believe that President Trump committed a terrible crime that never actually occurred and which the supposed victim denies ever happened. I'd like to briefly speak about the core mistruth at the heart of the Democrats' impeachment drive. They claim the president tried to get the Ukrainians to, quote, manufacture dirt against his political rivals. This is supported by precisely zero evidence. Once again, the Democrats simply made it up. But let's consider the broader question about why President Trump may have wanted answers to questions about Ukraine meddling in 2016. The Democrats downplay, ignore, or outright deny the many indications that Ukrainians actually did meddle in the election.
He's literally
a shocking about-face for people who for 3 years argued that foreign election meddling was an intolerable crime that threatened the heart of our democracy. While the brazen suddenness of this U-turn is jarring, this denial is a necessary part of their argument. After all, if there actually were indications of Ukraine election meddling, and if foreign election meddling is a dire threat, then President Trump would have a perfectly good reason for wanting to find out what happened. And since the meddling was aimed at
his own
his campaign,
CIA,
he'd have good reason
Mike
for
Pompeo
his personal
at the time
to make inquiries.
Found that Russians, there was Russian interference, not Ukrainian.
Hearings and previous depositions who express alarm about these inquiries were remarkably uninformed about these indications of Ukrainian election meddling and why the president may have been concerned by them. For example, I noted previously, Alexander Chalupa, a former staffer for the Democratic National Committee, admitted to Politico that she worked with officials at the Ukrainian embassy in Washington, D.C. to dig up dirt on the Trump campaign, which she passed on to the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. Chalupa revealed that Ukrainian embassy officials themselves were also working directly with reporters to trade information and leads about the Trump campaign. Ambassador Kent, you didn't seem to be too concerned about it in the last round of questioning, so I'll just skip you because we know that wasn't a concern. But Ambassador Taylor, you testified to this committee that you only recently became aware of reports of this cooperation between Ukrainian embassy officials and Chalupa to undermine the Trump campaign from your last deposition. Is that correct?
Mr. Nunes, it is correct that I had not known about this before.
I'm just going over your last deposition.
That's exactly right.
Ambassador.
Yep.
The Politico article cites three named Ukrainian officials asserting that the Ukrainian embassy supported the Hillary Clinton campaign. It quotes Ukrainian parliamentarian Andrei Artemenko saying, quote, "It was clear they were supporting Hillary Clinton's candidacy. They did everything from organizing meetings with the Clinton team to publicly supporting her to criticizing Trump. I think that they simply didn't meet with the Trump campaign because they thought Hillary would win," unquote. Ambassador Taylor, you testified you were unfamiliar with that statement. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You also said you were unaware that then Ukrainian ambassador to the U.S., Valerie Chalet, wrote an op-ed in The Hill during the 2016 presidential campaign criticizing then-candidate Trump. Is that correct?
That is correct.
You said you did not know that Sergei Lyshenko, then a Ukrainian parliamentarian, had admitted that part of his motivation in spreading information about the so-called Black Ledger, a disputed document purporting to reveal corruption by a former Trump campaign official, was to undermine the Trump's candidacy. This was in your deposition. Is that still correct?
That is still correct, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Fusion GPS contractor Nellie Orr testified to Congress that Lyshenko was a source for Fusion GPS's operation to dirty up the Trump campaign, including the compilation of the Steele dossier on behalf of the DNC and the Clinton campaign. You testified you were unaware that Lyshenko served as a source for that project. Ambassador Taylor, is this still correct?
It is, sir.
You said you did not know that Ukrainian Internal Affairs Minister Arsen Avakov mocked and disparaged then-candidate Trump on Facebook and Twitter. Is that still correct?
That is correct.
Ambassador Taylor, in your testimony to this committee, you said you were never briefed on these reports and statements, that you did not do due diligence before taking your post to discover that the president's and Mayor Giuliani's concerns may have been, and that you did what they may have been, and that you did not discuss them with Ambassador Yovanovitch. Is that still correct?
Yes, sir.
Furthermore, you said it upset you to hear about the many indications of Ukrainian election meddling. Your precise words were, I'm going to read them back to you, based on this political article, which again surprises me, disappoints me, because I think it's a mistake for any diplomat or government official in one country to interfere in the political life of another. That's disappointing, unquote. Ambassador Taylor, is that still your testimony?
Mr. Nunes, it is. Subsequent to that, I looked into the circumstances for several of the things that you just mentioned. In 2016, candidate Trump had made a statement saying that it was possible that he would allow Crimea to go back to Russia. He expressed that the sentiment or the opinion that it was possible that Crimea wanted to go back to Russia. What I can tell you, Ms. Nunes, is that that sentiment is amazingly inflammatory to all Ukrainians. So
I can understand that. Are you aware during the, I believe it was the 2012 election when at the time President Obama leaned over on a hot mic to the then Russian president and said that he'd have to wait till after the election? Was that inflammatory to the Ukrainians also?
I don't know, sir.
I just want to be clear that
are you
some
aware
government officials
of Vince
opposed
Foster?
President Trump's approach to Ukraine, but many had no idea what concerned him. In this case, it was numerous indications of Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election to oppose his campaign and support Hillary Clinton. Once you know that, it's easy to understand the president's desire to get to the bottom of this corruption and to discover exactly what happened in the 2016 election. And with that, I'll turn to Mr. Castor.
Ambassador Taylor, Mr. Kent, President Trump's concerns about Ukraine's role in the 2016 election, you believe he genuinely believed they were working against him, right? Ambassador Taylor?
Ms. Castor, I don't know what President or candidate Trump was thinking about the Ukrainians.
I mean, didn't he in this Oval Office meeting on May 23rd after the Zelensky inauguration, didn't he lament that the Ukrainians were out to get him?
This is the Republican Council.
I heard that his response to the suggestion that Mr. Zelensky visit Mr. Trump, President Trump, in the Oval Office was not well received, and that he had concerns about Ukrainians, yes.
But from the president's perspective, if the ambassador, Ukrainian ambassador to the United States, one of the most influential diplomats, is penning an op-ed, certainly with the okay of President Poroshenko, the DNC consultants are conferring with Ukrainian officials at the embassy. Former Prime Minister Yatseniak is saying things on social media. Interior Minister Avakov, who has spanned both the Poroshenko and the Zelensky realm, is also saying some very unkind things on social media about the president. You certainly can appreciate that President Trump was very concerned that some elements of the Ukrainian establishment were not in favor of him, did not support him, and were out to get him.
If I go to, and I'll allow the question, but
Parliamentary Inquiry, are you seriously interrupting our time here?
I will allow the question. I won't dock this from the time. I just want to be clear, Ambassador, if you're able to verify the things that counsel has asked you in the prerequisite of the question, that's fine. Otherwise, in questions from the majority or the minority that may assume facts not in evidence before you, you should be cautioned about that.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
The time is with Mr. with Minority Counsel.
Mr. Ratcliffe.
Chairman, I sat here through the first 45 minutes and literally had an objection to almost the foundation of every question that Mr. Goldman asked regarding facts not in evidence, leading. But House Resolution 660 does not say that we are under the federal rules of evidence. If it is your position that I should be asserting objections to questions that violate the federal rules of evidence, let me know now, because this hearing is going to change significantly.
As I said, Mr. Ratcliffe, I will allow the question.
Oh, well.
I think the gentleman has
in a that case.
Question about the rules. So what are the rules that are going to govern this? Does the ranking member seek recognition? I'm yielding you to a question I just asked you.
For what purpose do you seek recognition?
To answer Mr. Ratcliffe's question.
I have answered it. May I resume your question?
Respectfully, Mr. Chairman. You haven't answered my question whether or not I should be assumes facts not in evidence or leading objections to questions that are posed from this point forward. That's my question.
Mr. Ratcliffe, I'll say once again, I'm not objecting to the question, but I am instructing the witness that they should not presume questions from the majority or the minority that may represent facts not in evidence are correct. I have answered your question. We will resume the questioning and resume the clock.
Mr. Castor. So you certainly can appreciate President Trump's concerns.
What?
Yeah, they were mean to me, right, Ambassador?
They were mean.
Ms. Castor, I don't know the exact nature of President Trump's concerns. In my deposition, I recall you handed me the Politico article, which listed at least three of the elements that you have described earlier. And you've recognized, and I have confirmed with the ranking minority member, that it's the first I'd heard of those and was surprised by those. I don't know President Trump's reaction to those.
In the information published by Sergei Leshenko, former Ukrainian investigative journalist, and then he was a member of the parliament, about the Manafort black ledgers, in August of 2016. The very day that was published, Mr. Manafort resigned from the campaign, correct?
I don't know, Mr. Castor.
But certainly that gives rise to some concern that there are elements of the Ukrainian establishment that were out to get the president. That's a very reasonable belief of his, correct?
I don't know.
The run-up to the 2016 election...
it was not fair, they told on Manafort for taking all those illegal bribes.
I'm sorry,
not
what's the question?
There are many facts relating to the run-up of the 2016 election that remain unresolved.
This guy has way more face than he needs.
Any further...
Well, Attorney General Barr, in May of 2019, tasked the U.S. Attorney for Connecticut, John Durham, to broadly examine the government's collection of intelligence involving the president's campaign. That effort, initially was an administrative review, has turned into a criminal probe. And U.S. Attorney Durham is casting a wide net and is following the facts where they may lead.
Did someone tell this guy, Steve Castor, that he was going to be asking questions today? Because he doesn't seem prepared.
That's as much as I'm aware.
And so to the extent any information resides in Ukraine, it's perfectly appropriate for the Ukrainians to try to get to the bottom of that, for the Ukrainians to cooperate with the United States through official channels to share that information, correct?
Mr. Castor, can you say that one again? I'd appreciate it if you would restate the question.
To the extent Ukraine has facts related to the run-up of the 2016 election that are under the U.S. Attorney Durham's probe, Ukraine should cooperate with the United States, and to the extent there are Ukrainians doing improper things, the Ukrainians ought to investigate that themselves, correct?
Mr. Castor, the Ukrainian-American relations are very supportive. The Ukrainians will certainly be responsive to requests.
So when the president on the call transcript of July 25th raises this with President Zelensky, and he urges that there be a connection between the Ukrainian government and the Justice Department officially, that's the appropriate way to raise an issue with the Ukrainian president, correct?
It's appropriate for the Justice Department and the Prosecutor General to cooperate and to exchange information, yes.
But to the extent the President has concerns and to the extent the Attorney General is having the U.S. Attorney Durham look into that, isn't it entirely appropriate for the President to flag this for President Zelensky and say that you should be in touch with our official channels?
Ms. Castro, I don't know the precise appropriateness of these kinds of relations.
Now, were you involved, either of you, involved with the preparation for the 725 call?
I was not.
I was not.
And how do you account for that? I mean, you are the two of the key officials with responsibility for
those guys,
Ukrainian policy. I mean, if the President of the United States is going to have a call with the leader of Ukraine, why wouldn't you ordinarily be involved with the preparation?
Sir, we work for the Department of State in an embassy overseas, and in preparation for a presidential phone call, that responsibility lies with the staff of the National Security Council. Normally, if there is enough sufficient time, National Security staff can solicit information, usually from the State Department, and we can draw on the embassy. But that's only background information. And my understanding, having never worked at the National Security Council, is that National Security staff write a memo to the President, and none of us see that outside of the National Security staff.
Okay, so the chargé or the U.S. ambassador to the country wouldn't ordinarily be on a call with a foreign leader?
That's correct.
Oh.
Would not.
And did
he didn't
Colonel
know.
Vindman or anyone at the National Security Council staff reach out to you, Mr. Kent, in preparation for the call?
I was given notification the day before on July 24th, and to the extent I had any role, it was to reach out to the embassy, give them the heads up, and ask them to ensure that the secure communications link in the Office of the President of Ukraine was functional so the call could be patched through from the White House Situation Room.
Did you provide any substantive advice to Colonel Vindman about the call and what ought to be the official position?
I was not asked, and I did not provide.
Okay. Same with you, Ambassador?
The same.
And the call was scheduled. You know, you testified earlier that the call was on again, off again. And after the July 10th meeting with Ambassador Bolton, the consensus was the call was not going to happen. Is that correct?
I would not say that was a consensus. The State Department's position was that a call between the two presidents would be useful. Mm-hmm. And once
Zelensky's party won the first ever
absolute majority in parliamentary elections on July 21st, the idea of a congratulatory
call
made
but I don't
eminent
know,
sense.
He was a schlubby detective that always got
his subjects
of the investigation to underestimate him.
Did you get a readout?
And then he would
initially from the call?
This guy, Steve Castro, reminds me of Columbo.
Mr. Castro,
if Columbo actually didn't have
the
secret agenda.
Submerged talent.
Yeah, exactly.
The Ukrainians put out.
Reminds me of Lewandowski.
I got a readout several days later from Mr. Morrison, National Security Council.
Okay. And how about you, Mr. Kent?
I likewise first saw the Ukrainian statement, and I believe the next day, July 26th, which would have been a Friday, I did get a partial readout from Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, yes.
Ambassador Taylor, you said that the Ukrainian readout was cryptic. Is that just because it's initially written in Ukrainian and translated to the U.S.?
No, it's as a general rule, both United States and other countries, including Ukraine, will put out very short summaries that kind of hit the highlights of the discussion, but without going into detail.
Okay. And you mentioned it was cryptic. Why did you think it was cryptic?
Knowing now what, having read the transcript and looking back at their summary, as I recall, and I don't recall the exact words, but they said that there were issues to be pursued in order to improve relations between the two countries or something like that.
That seems pretty ordinary.
It seems pretty ordinary.
You were with President Zelensky the very next day?
We were. We had a meeting with him the very next day.
And did President Zelensky raise any concerns about his views of the call?
He said, I, Ambassador Volker, Ambassador Sondland were in his office,
And we asked him, I think, how the call. He said call was fine. I was happy with the call.
Okay. And did you get any additional readouts subsequently about the call? Like, when did you first learn that the call contained things that concerned you? Was that not until September 25th?
Mr. Morrison, as I say, briefed me several days later, before the end of July. And he, I think this is where I said in my testimony that he said it could have gone better. And he said it mentioned that the call mentioned Mr. Giuliani. Mm-hmm. He also said that the call mentioned the former ambassador. Both of those were concerning.
Giuliani was first raised on the call by President Zelensky, correct?
I don't recall.
Okay.
It could have been. Well, I have it here if you'd like.
Yeah, it's on page.
Very good.
Page 3. The first mention of Giuliani is from President Zelensky, and it's on page 3.
He got the short stick.
And President Zelensky says, I will personally tell you that one of my assistants spoke with Mr. Giuliani just recently, and we are hoping very much that Mr. Giuliani will be able to travel to Ukraine, and we will meet once he comes to Ukraine. Did that surprise you?
Again, I didn't have the transcript at the time. All I heard was that Giuliani was mentioned. Mr. Morrison said that Giuliani was mentioned in the call.
But the way Zelensky states it here, it sounds like he is very much looking forward to speaking with America's mayor.
That's what I found out when I read the transcript on the 25th of September or so.
Okay. Now, Mr. Kent, corruption in Ukraine is endemic, correct?
That's correct.
And it affects the courts, the prosecutors, and there have historically been problems with all the prosecutors in Ukraine, correct?
I would say up until the new set of prosecutors appointed by President Zelensky in the last 2 months, correct.
Okay. And so the U.S. government, the consensus hope at the State Department and the National Security Council and the White House is that Zelensky's the real deal. He's a real reformer. He's genuinely interested in rooting out corruption, prosecuting the bad guys, correct?
I would say we are cautiously optimistic, and we will work wherever there is the political will to do the right thing and put forward genuine reform.
And at the heart of the corruption is this oligarchical system, correct? Where the oligarchs take control, often by a virtual theft of
join DSA.
You know, for example, the right to certain energy licenses, correct?
That is one element, yes, sir.
And the company Burisma, its leader, Sochevsky, he has a little bit of a storied history of corruption, doesn't he?
Mr. Sochevsky was Minister of Energy from 2010 to 2012 under the pro-Russian government. And he used his regulatory authority to award gas exploration licenses to companies that he himself controlled. That would be considered an act of corruption, in my view, yes.
And certainly self-dealing.
Certainly self-dealing and self-enriching.
And how did the Ukrainian government
what's wrong with that?
In the spring of 2014, the Ukrainian government, the new government after the Revolution of Dignity, turned to partners, particularly the U.S. and the U.K., to try to recover tens of billions of dollars of stolen assets. The first case that we tried to recover that money came from Mr. Zlochevsky. The Serious Crimes Office in the U.K. had already opened up an investigation. They worked with us and the Ukrainian authorities to develop more information. The $23 million was frozen until somebody in the General Prosecutor's Office of Ukraine shut the case, issued a letter to his lawyer, and that money went poof.
So essentially paid a bribe to make the case go away?
That is our strong assumption, yes, sir.
Okay. Now, at any point in time, has anyone in the Ukrainian government tried to reinvestigate that, or did those crimes just go unpunished, and was he free to go?
Mr. Zlochevsky spent time, as far as I understand, in Moscow and Monaco after he fled Ukraine. We continued to raise as a point of order that because U.S. taxpayer dollars had been used to try to recover frozen assets, that we have a fiduciary responsibility, and we continued to press Ukrainian officials to answer for why alleged corrupt prosecutors had closed a case And we have, till now, not gotten a satisfactory answer. So to summarize, we thought that Mokola Zlochevsky had stolen money. We thought a prosecutor had taken a bribe to shut the case, and those were our main concerns.
And are you in favor of that matter being fully investigated and prosecuted?
I think since U.S. taxpayer dollars were wasted, I would love to see the Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office find who the corrupt prosecutor was that took the bribe and how much it was paid. And that's what I said to the Deputy Prosecutor General on February 3rd, 2015.
But in addition to prosecuting the person that took the bribes, shouldn't the organization or individual that sponsored the bribes be prosecuted?
I would agree that the Ukrainian law authorities should uphold the rule of law and hold people account for breaking Ukrainian law.
So this company, Burisma, involved in lots of criminal activity, correct?
I do not know that.
But over the years, it's been involved in a number of questionable dealings, correct?
I would say that it's the largest private gas producer in the country, and its business reputation is mixed.
So to the extent a new regime is coming in under President Zelensky, it certainly would be fair for the new prosecutor, a genuine
case
prosecutor,
closed.
To
case
re-examine
closed.
Old crimes that hadn't sufficiently been brought to justice, right?
I believe that the new Prosecutor General, Ruslan Rybashapka, made a statement to that end that they would be reviewing past cases. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, this is a country where those that commit crimes generally never get held to account, so there's a lot to review.
Okay. Now, the bribe was paid in what year?
To the best of my knowledge, the case against Zlochevsky, the former minister, was shut down December of 2014.
Okay. And right around that time, Burisma starts adding officials to
folks,
its board. Is that correct?
I can't imagine
is, yes,
this is the strategy.
Zlochevsky invited a series of new individuals to join the board in 2014.
And do you know what his strategy was in adding officials?
They're not
to
in any way impeaching the testimony from the first half
of
this.
And who are some of the folks?
And they're also not making a compelling competing narrative. Like, I can understand the theory that we're going to come up with our own story. And that seems to be what they're doing, but
some Americans,
it is,
the most prominent one in this.
There's nothing that Fox News can even use.
It's basically like they read the transcript and they say that because they know nobody's going to read anything.
Right.
Well, the competing narrative is you're corrupt too, right?
Who's the you, though, in this?
Sir, I work for the government.
The Bidens. Who's hammering on the Bidens
so
earlier?
I
don't feel like they're getting anywhere on that. Like, I mean, that's what I anticipated they would do.
Was Hunter Biden a corporate governance expert?
There is.
I have no idea what Hunter Biden studied at university or what his CV says.
Like, is he the Jeffrey Sonnenfeld of the Ukraine?
I have no awareness or knowledge of what his background was and what he may have done on the border.
Okay, so you don't know whether he has any business experience in Ukraine prior to joining Burisma's board?
I've heard nothing about prior experience.
Okay. No. Do you know if he speaks Ukrainian?
I do not.
Do you know if he possesses any other element other than the fact that he is the son of, at the time, the sitting vice president?
I do not.
Okay. Ambassador Taylor, do you know whether Hunter Biden offers anything other than the fact that his dad's the former vice president?
I don't.
Or at the time was the vice president?
I have no knowledge of Hunter Biden.
But you would agree it raises questions, right? He was getting paid, I think, $50,000 a month. To sit on the board. Did you know if he relocated to Ukraine?
I'm sorry, Mr. Kessler, say again.
Do you know if Hunter Biden relocated to Ukraine?
No knowledge.
Do you know, Mr. Kent?
Again, no knowledge.
Okay. So he's getting paid $50,000 a month, but we don't know whether he had any experience.
Board members
he had any,
never live
spoke
where
the language,
the
or whether he moved
HQ
to Ukraine,
is.
Correct?
Correct.
Now, at this time, Vice President Biden was taking a specific interest in Ukraine, wasn't he?
He was.
And could you tell us about that?
I believe while he was vice president, he made a total of 6 visits to Ukraine. One may have been during the old regime, Yanukovych, and that would make 5 visits after the Revolution of Dignity, which started February of 2014.
Okay. And you were the DCM, the Deputy Chief of Mission at the time, correct?
Starting in 2015, yes.
Okay. And did Vice President Biden come when you were... When you were
now
post?
He did not. I came back for Ukrainian language training, and so I missed several
okay.
visits.
Now, you've seen Vice President Biden's he's sort of given a speech, and he's a little folksy about how he went into Ukraine and he told the Ukrainians that if they don't fire the prosecutor, they're going to lose their $1 billion in loan guarantees. You've seen that, correct?
I have. I think it was a speech at the Council of Foreign Relations in January 2018.
Right. And he also said that he's been there, you know, to Ukraine 13 times. Do you know if that's accurate?
To the best of my knowledge, when he was vice president, he made 6 visits.
And did the State Department ever express any concerns to the vice president's office that the vice president's role at the time in engaging on Ukraine presented any issues?
No, the vice president's role was critically important. It was top cover to help us pursue our policy agenda.
Okay, but given Hunter Biden's role in Burisma's board of directors, at some point you testified in your deposition that you expressed some concern to the vice president's office. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what did they do about that concern that you expressed?
I have no idea. I reported my concern to the office of the vice president.
Okay, and that was the end of it? Nobody...
you would have to ask people who worked in the office of the vice president during 2015.
But after you expressed the concern of a perceived conflict of interest, at least...
Hate those.
The vice president's engagement in Ukraine didn't decrease, did it?
Correct, because the vice president was promoting U.S. policy objectives in Ukraine.
And Hunter Biden's role on the board of Burisma didn't cease, did it?
To the best of my knowledge, it didn't. And my concern was that there was the possibility of a perception of a conflict of interest.
Now, Ambassador Taylor, I want to turn to the discussion of the irregular channel you describe. And in fairness, this irregular channel of diplomacy, it's not as outlandish
that
as
those last 2 minutes will be on
correct?
Fox News.
It's
I mean, that,
not
that's
as
where
outlandish
they
as it could be. Yeah, I agree, Mr.
Okay, we have Ambassador Volker, who's a former Senate-confirmed ambassador to NATO, a long-time State Department diplomat, and you've known Ambassador Volker for years, correct?
That's correct.
A man of unquestioned integrity, correct?
That's correct.
And somebody with incredible knowledge of the region.
With very good knowledge of the region.
Yes, and the best interests of the United States.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right.
And the best interests of Ukraine.
His first priority is clearly the United States.
Okay.
And to the extent that Ukraine has an implication for that, yes.
Okay.
Ukraine as well.
And the second member of the irregular channel is Ambassador Sondland, who is Senate confirmed, ambassador to the EU. So his involvement
here,
while...
This is where
it
gets a little sticky for Taylor as a diplomat.
Know, not necessarily part of his official duties as the ambassador to the EU, is certainly is not outlandish for him to be interested and engaged pursuant to the President or Secretary Pompeo's direction, correct?
It's a little unusual for the U.S. ambassador to the EU to play a role in Ukraine policy.
Okay. And, you know, it might be irregular, but it's certainly not outlandish. And then Secretary Perry is the third member of the irregular channel.
There you go. Not outlandish.
Senate-confirmed official, somebody with deep experience in energy markets, and he was pursuing some, you know, liquefied natural gas projects in Ukraine?
That's correct, Mr. Kastner.
So his involvement, Secretary Perry's involvement, is perfectly acceptable?
It is.
Okay. Now, this irregular channel as it developed, when did you determine that it became problematic? I mean, you in your opening statement, identified yourself appropriately as the leader of the regular channel.
At least a participant. There's another leader of the regular channel.
So when did you first develop concerns that the irregular channel was being problematic?
So I arrived in Kyiv in mid-September. By late September, a couple of phone calls with...
You arrived in Kyiv in June, right?
June. Sorry.
June 17th?
Mid-June.
Yep.
June 17th. Thank you. And so by the end of June, I had begun to hear references to investigations... Mm-hmm. as something that would have to happen prior to the meeting that
that President Trump had offered to President Zelensky.
Okay.
And that began to raise questions for me.
Okay. Now you've known Ambassador Volker, and you've certainly have a reason to know Ambassador Sondland. What did you do at this point, or did you ever try to wrest control of the irregular channel?
I didn't try to wrest control of the irregular channel, do that. At the time when I
why not though? If you have these concerns.
Because, Ms. Castor, at the time, as Ambassador Kent, no, Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent testified, both channels were interested in having a meeting between President Zelensky and President Trump. So there's no reason to kind of wrest control if we're going in the same direction.
But at some point, you developed concerns. I mean, your opening statement is here. I mean, you're the impeachment witness number one, and you're number two, Mr. Kent. You know, for the case impeaching the President of the United States because of the concerns you've testified about the irregular channel, correct?
I was concerned when the irregular channel appeared to be going against the irregular channel was going against the overall direction of and purpose of the regular channel.
So, and as I understand the record, however, you when you arrived in Ukraine, you had the support of the secretary and the secretary's top advisor, Counselor Ulrich Breckbuhl, correct?
That is correct.
And they assured you that if you had any concerns, you would be able to contact them, and they would have your back.
That is correct.
And you knew going in that the Rudy Giuliani element presented some complexities, correct?
I was concerned about Rudy Giuliani's statements and involvement in the Ukraine policy, yes.
Okay. So when it genuinely became, you know, a concern for you, what did you do to either engage Sondland and Volker and Perry, Giuliani? By the way, have you ever met Rudy Giuliani during these times relevant?
Not during the times relevant. Mr. Giuliani visited Ukraine one time when I was there, I think in 2007 or 2008.
Okay.
That's the only time I've met him.
Okay. So you've never had any communications with Rudy Giuliani as part of these irregular channel business matters?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. And anyway, getting back to my question, did you try to engage Breckbuhl or the secretary during this time period? I know you said that you had, I believe, an August 21st or 22nd telephone call with Breckbuhl. You had a July 10th telephone call with Breckbuhl, and then you sent a first-person cable to the secretary on August 29th?
That is correct.
Is that sort of the universe of initiatives you took inside the State Department to raise your concerns about the irregular channel?
I also raised my concerns with Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent. In particular, early on when I think I may have mentioned this phone call that was odd in that it did not include the normal staff. Mm-hmm. Indeed, Ambassador Sondland's staff, and that struck me as unusual. I consulted with Mr. Kent, and at his suggestion, made a note of this, and also had, I think at that point, I had a conversation with Mr. Breckbuhl.
That was a June 28th call, I believe?
That's correct.
And in your opening statement, you expressed some concerns about what Ambassador Sondland had said. But then once Zelensky got on the phone, it proceeded in a very regular channel way, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So the June 28th call, at least in and of itself, didn't ultimately, as it played out, present any problems for you?
The call with President Zelensky did not. The preparation for that call, the preparation included maybe 15 minutes of just the Americans that would stay on the call.
Right.
And that, again, that was a little irregular in that it didn't have the staff. Mm-hmm. It was also in that pre-call, in that 15 minutes before President Zelensky got on the phone, where Ambassador Volker told the rest of the participants that he was planning to have a conversation with President Zelensky in Toronto in 3 days, 4 days, where he would outline for President Zelensky.
I don't know where they're going to end up with this.
Of the phone call.
But I think they're trying to get Taylor to say at one point, like, well, this is more or less
normal.
And
you didn't have any issue with that, did you?
The only issue I had with that, Mr. Caster, was there was reference
Caster, a little bit.
To investigations in, I believe that's, I'll have to check my notes on that, but that, there was raised issues for me that I didn't understand what Ambassador Volker had in mind that he was specifically going to raise with Mr. Zelensky. That was a little bit of a concern.
Okay. I mean, the president's expressed his, you know, interest in certain investigations, certainly relating to the 2016 election and relating to, you know, this corrupt Burisma outfit. So that wasn't inconsistent with the president's message, right?
I'm not sure, Mr. Caster. Maybe can I ask you to repeat the question?
The president's concerns about the 2016 election and needing to get to the bottom of it, and the president's concerns is ultimately related to the Burisma company. I mean, if Ambassador Volker is raising that with Zelensky, that's consistent with the direction of the president, correct?
The president's interest, or I would say Mr. Giuliani's interest, because that's what we were, that's what was very clear at the time.
They're going to try and argue that Donald Trump is the United States and that it is not inconsistent with foreign policy to be interested in the conspiracy theory.
By the way, do you know how many times Volker met with Giuliani?
I don't.
How many would you guess? Is it like, was he talking to him all the time or meeting with him all the time?
Mr. Kessler, I don't know.
Okay. From his, at his deposition, he told us just once, and you know, he texted back and forth with the mayor.
He told us,
and it had a call or two.
Oh, I didn't,
but it wasn't
the
a pervasive
was part of the Star Chamber
engagement for Ambassador Volker. Were you aware of that?
I was not aware. I was aware of one breakfast, I think, but that's the only one that I was aware of.
And Mr. Kent, before my time expires, I want to circle back to
that was it.
The company of Burisma, and you testified at your deposition that there was an instance where USAID had engaged with Burisma and possibly sponsoring a program, and you took issue with that and recommended USAID to pull back from that. Could you tell us about that?
So I became aware in the summer, I believe, of 2016 that as a part of what I recall was a clean energy awareness campaign, the part of the USAID mission that worked on economics and governance, including energy, had sponsored some sort of contest for young Ukrainians to come up with a theme, and there was a prize. I believe it may have been a camera. And they had co-sponsored and with public
okay,
private
that's what I was trying to
being
stop.
A buzzword,
camera.
Having a co-sponsorship with Burisma. Given the past history of our interest in recovering stolen assets from Zlochevsky, it was my view that it was inappropriate for the embassy to be co-sponsoring a contest with Burisma. I raised that with the mission director at the embassy. She agreed, and the USAID mission kept the contest but dropped the public-private partnership sponsorship.
The time of the gentleman's
that
expired.
Was it.
I will now move to five-minute member rounds. I recognize myself for 5 minutes.
There you go.
Ms.
All
Kent,
right.
I want to follow up on my colleague's questions regarding Burisma. You testified about a time when an oligarch named Zlochevsky, I think it was self-dealing, awarding himself contracts. When was that?
To the best of my knowledge, he was Minister of Ecology under President Yanukovych from 2010 to 2012. And at the time, licenses to have substrata exploration of gas were awarded by a subdivision of the Ministry of Ecology.
So this corrupt self-dealing then was approximately 7 years, at least 7 years before the events that bring us here today, the phone call on the 25th and the events around it?
Correct. His time as minister was 2010 to 2012. Hunter Biden joined the board of Burisma in 2014.
And you've read the call transcript, have you not?
I have, and I have it in front of me, but I haven't read it for about a month.
Is there any mention in the discussion with President Trump and President Zelensky of this oligarch Zelensky, who 7 years earlier had been self-dealing?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
Is there a discussion of awarding contracts to oneself or the corrupt acts in the 2012 to 2014 timeframe?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
No, what the president brings up is CrowdStrike, the server, and the Bidens. Am I right?
I see that here, yes.
There was no discussion on that call of setting up an anti-corruption court or looking into corruption among oligarchs or companies in general.
That's what I meant. CrowdStrike set up anti-corruption court.
The comments were focused on two things, 2016 and the Bidens. Am I right?
I believe so, yes.
Now, you testified in your opening statement, I do not believe the United States should ask other countries to engage in selective politically associated investigations or prosecutions against opponents of those in power, because such selective actions undermine the rule of law regardless of the country. The selective politically associated investigations or prosecutions against opponents of those in power, are you referring to the Bidens there?
I'm referring as a general principle about the promotion of the rule of law.
But that would apply to the President of the United States seeking an investigation of his political opponent, would it not?
It could be interpreted that way, yes, sir.
And I take it in your discussions, Ambassador Taylor, with Ambassador Sondland or others, what was communicated to you was that the President wanted investigations into 2016 and the Bidens, not into an oligarch named Zelensky or self-dealing, but 2016 and the Bidens. Was that your understanding?
That was my understanding.
And in fact, when you said your staff overheard this call between Ambassador Sondland and the president.
Here's Schiff basically trying to establish that the idea that Donald Trump was concerned about corruption as a general general proposition in the country of Ukraine is laughable. Now, we all know this.
What does the president think about
you? We all know this.
He's just interested.
He heard a conspiracy theory on WorldNet Daily or wherever it is about CrowdStrike and servers in Ukraine and wants to get some type of investigation into Hunter Biden. And we should say, look, we're going to defend Hunter Biden. There's no doubt that this represents the idea that a family member can trade on that family name and get a job because those people think it's going to protect them. That is, in my estimation, may not be illegal, but it is corrupt. It is a fundamentally corrupt problem that we have in politics to a large extent and broadly speaking in this country, in the world.
Yeah, people are right to be mad about that.
Absolutely. But it's no different than when I was mad that Chelsea Clinton got a job on NBC TV on NBC News. She had no experience as a journalist. You know, Abby Huntsman getting a job on MSNBC. Believe me. I mean, this is
at least she showed up to there. Right. Like, wasn't this kind of a no-show job for her?
No, it's a board of directors. For people who don't know what sitting on a board of director is, Arianna Huffington sits on a board of a shoe company. She doesn't know anything about shoes.
Yeah.
It's you do this to develop almost all members of board of directors. Some are there because of their ability to advise in a certain business thing. And the other is just to build relationships across business.
Yeah. Human Rolodex.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
I just assumed because of how much money he was getting that there was some other component to the
job. I can tell you. I mean, I know people who are in this world, and sometimes they come from business expertise, and sometimes it's just like, we're going to put, an athlete on there because they're going to have, some recognition. I mean, this is just the way it works.
Jay-Z
and they
the
get
Mets.
Paid. The idea that they get paid $500,000 a year to show up for three meetings, that's what this is. This has nothing to do with Hunter Biden. That's That's what sitting on a board of director of a major corporation is.
It's almost like the problem is larger than the Bidens.
Okay, right. But let's just stay focused on the impeachment and not the sort of like systemic problems of corporate boards. The point being here that Donald Trump does not care about corruption in Ukraine, doesn't know the history of it, doesn't care. Cut money for international anti-corruption efforts. Sought to cut more. So this is Schiff just trying to make that point with Taylor that, look, we all know. Let's not kid ourselves. And you know what? I don't even think the people watching Fox think that like Donald Trump's in there like totally worried about
it. The GOP council didn't even act like it was a real concern. He just says that Trump actually believed it himself. So right. Isn't it consistent?
Right.
You don't know what's going on in my head.
Yeah, let's listen a little more.
Was concerned Zelensky didn't want to be used as some tool in American politics. Is that right?
That's correct, sir.
So Zelensky didn't want to go on TV and announce political investigations that he thought would mire him in U.S. politics, right?
He knew that he and his advisors knew that it's a bad idea to interject, to interfere in other nations' elections. Yes,
but,
sir.
But nonetheless, it appeared until the aid was lifted, the hold was lifted, that he felt compelled to do it.
He was making plans. His staff was making plans to have him make some kind of announcement. I don't know what it would have been on CNN in public.
Even though he didn't want to be marred in U.S. politics.
Even though he knew it was a bad idea to interfere in other people's elections.
Mr. Nunes, you are recognized for 7 minutes and 10 seconds.
I'm going to take a pee break. Thank
the gentleman for that.
Continue on here.
Ambassador Taylor, you said in your deposition that the first time you heard about this issue with Rudy Giuliani, and I'm paraphrasing, but you read it in the New York Times. Is that correct?
I do remember that I do remember noticing about Mr. Giuliani being involved in this in that article. Yes, sir.
Okay. I think one of the mothers of all conspiracy theories is that somehow the President of the United States would want a country that he doesn't even like, he doesn't want to give foreign aid to have the Ukrainians start an investigation into Biden's. With that, I yield to Mr. Jordan.
Thank the gentleman for yielding. Ambassador Taylor, thank you for being here. Aid's held up on July 18th. Is that right?
That's when I first heard about it, Mr.
Jordan. And then it's released, Ambassador Taylor, on September 11th. And we know that from your deposition, in those 55 days that aid is delayed, you met with President Zelensky 3 times. The first one was July 26th, the day after the famous call now between President Trump and President Zelensky. President Zelensky meets with you, Ambassador Volker, and Ambassador Sondland.
Okay.
And again, according to your deposition and your testimony, there was no linkage of security assistance dollars to investigating Burisma or the Bidens. Second meeting's August 27th.
Oh, this is Jim Jordan, folks. He, of course, is the guy who has ignored at least two different people.
And others. And again, there's no linkage.
Telling him that there was a sexual predator going after the.
Then, of course, the third meeting is September 5th.
Student athletes that he coached.
You, Senators Johnson and Murphy. And once again, there was no linkage of security assistance dollars to an investigation of Burisma or the Bidens. 3 meetings with the president of Ukraine, the new president, and no linkage. That's accurate?
Ms. Jordan, it's certainly accurate on the first two meetings, because to my knowledge, the Ukrainians were not aware of the hold on assistance until the 29th of August.
So the Politico article.
The third meeting that you mentioned with the senators, Senators yep. Murphy and Senator Johnson, there was discussion of the security assistance, but
no linkage.
But there was not discussion of linkage.
3 meetings face-to-face with President Zelensky, no linkage. Yet, in your deposition, you said this, and you said it again the first hour of the majority. My clear understanding was security assistance money would not come until President Zelensky committed to pursue the investigation. My clear understanding was they weren't going to get the money until President Zelensky committed to pursue the investigations.
Taylor knew this.
Now, with all due respect,
even though Zelensky may not have.
Your understanding was obviously wrong, because it didn't happen. President Zelensky didn't announce he was going to investigate Burisma or the Bidens. He didn't do a press conference and say, I'm going to investigate the Bidens. We're going to investigate Burisma. He didn't tweet about it. And you just told the ranking member he didn't do the CNN interview and announce he's going to investigate Burisma or the Bidens. So three face-to-face meetings. It doesn't come up. No linkage whatsoever. President Zelensky doesn't announce it before the aid is released on the 11th. And yet you said you have a clear understanding that those two things were going to happen. The money was going to get released, but not until there was an investigation. And that, in fact, didn't happen. So what I'm wondering is, where did you get this clear understanding?
As I testified, Mr. Jordan, this came from Ambassador Sondland.
Well, can you hold 1 second, Ambassador? I'm going to bring you a piece of paper from Ambassador Sondland's statement.
Very good.
And you can take a look at this. Go ahead, though. I want to let you finish.
So, Ms. Jordan, should I read this or?
No, I just want you to have it because I'm going to read it.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, but I want you to go ahead and finish. You said, Ambassador, you got this from Ambassador Sondland.
That is correct. Ambassador Sondland also said that he had talked to President Zelensky and Mr. Yermak and had told them that although this was not a quid pro quo, if President Zelensky did not clear things up in public, we would be at a stalemate. That was one point. It was also the case.
Mr. Morrison talked to you, right?
No. What I was going to say is Ambassador Sondland also told me that he recognized that it was a mistake to have told the Ukrainians that only the meeting with the president in the Oval Office was held up on the in order to get these investigations. No, it was not just the meeting. It was also the security system. That is, everything was. So those two discussions.
No, I understand.
Okay.
All right. So, again, just to recap, you had three meetings with President Zelensky. No linkage in those three meetings came up. Ambassador Zelensky didn't announce that he was going to do any investigation of the Bidens or Burisma's before the aid was released.
Oh,
he didn't do a tweet, didn't do anything.
This is where Jordan feels like I have to restate this for Fox because I didn't get
the bite. And then what you have in front of you is an
bite.
Addendum that Mr. Sondland made to his testimony that we got a couple weeks ago. It says, Declaration of Ambassador Gordon Sondland. I, Gordon Sondland, do hereby swear and affirm as follows. I want you to look at point number two, bullet point number two, second sentence. Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yermak on September 1st, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. Now, this is his clarification. Let me read it one more time. Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yermak
on
September 1st, 2019, in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw and a meeting with President Zelensky. We got six people having four conversations in one sentence, and you just told me this is where you got your clear understanding. Which, I mean, even though you had three opportunities with President Zelensky for him to tell you, you know what, we're going to do these investigations to get the aid. Didn't tell you three different times. Never makes an announcement. Never tweets about it. Never does a CNN interview.
Never tweets.
Ambassador, you weren't on the call, were you? The president, you didn't listen on President Trump's call and President Zelensky's call?
I did not.
You've never talked with Chief of Staff Mulvaney?
I never did.
You never met the president?
That's correct.
You had three meetings again with Zelensky and it didn't come up.
And two of those they had never heard about as far as I know.
And President
there was no reason for it to come up.
President Zelensky never made an announcement. This is what I can't believe. And you're their star witness. You're their first witness.
You're the guy
based on this, I've seen church prayer chains that are easier to understand than this. Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told. Now, again, this is I hereby swear and affirm from
church.
Gordon Sondland.
I've seen accusations
Ambassador
of
Taylor
sexual
recalls
assault.
Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yermak on September 1st, 20. This all happens, by the way, in Warsaw, where Vice President Pence meets with President Zelensky. And guess
Ambassador
what?
Taylor,
they didn't talk about any linkage either.
Time of the gentleman's expired. Ambassador Taylor, would you like to respond?
The only response, I have two responses, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Mr. Jordan, glad to take those questions. Let me just say that I don't consider myself a star witness for anything.
They do. You don't.
No,
they
I
do.
Don't. I'm responding
Jordan,
to your questions.
Please don't interrupt the witness.
As I think I was clear about, I'm not here to take one side or the other or to advocate any particular outcome. So let me just restate that. Second thing is that my understanding is only coming from people that I talk to.
We got that.
I think this clarification from Ambassador Sondland was because he said he didn't remember this in his first deposition. So he wanted to kind of clarify. But I think, Mr. Jordan, the way I read this, he remembers it the same way I do.
Yeah, and it's real clear, right?
It's very clear to me.
Thank you. Thank you, Ambassador Taylor.
Sarcasm is very
Mr.
strong.
Hunter, can I
yes,
ask five
very
minutes?
Strong. Oh,
gentlemen,
so he molested you in the shower.
One of the things I find startling about these proceedings is that faced with very serious allegations of presidential misconduct, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle don't engage or defend that conduct. Rather, they spin theories about black ledgers and steel dossiers and the startling revelation that Ukrainians might have been upset when a presidential candidate suggested that perhaps he would let the Russians keep Crimea. Or, of course, we get the attacks so epitomized by Mr. Nunes' opening statement, when he attacked Democrats, he attacked the media, and most disgustingly attacked the extraordinary men and women of the State Department and the FBI. When a defense does emerge, it looks a little like this. Ukraine is a corrupt country, and the president was just acting in a long line, a long tradition of actually trying to address corruption in Ukraine. Mr. Kent, you've worked on anti-corruption and rule of law efforts for much of your 27-year career. Is that correct?
I feel like Jim Himes, if you were going to cast him in this role, would be just too on the nose.
Since 2012,
just correct. So it looks a little bit too...
Like most of us up here, I don't have a good sense of what a real anti-corruption effort that we must engage in all over the world all the time, what that looks like. So let me ask you to just take a minute and just characterize for us what a real initiative, what a real program of anti-corruption might look like.
If we're doing a systemic, holistic program, you need institutions with integrity. That starts with investigators, it goes to prosecutors, it goes to courts, and eventually it goes to the correction system. In countries like Ukraine, we generally start with law enforcement, and that's what we did in 2014-15 with the new patrol police. There also is oftentimes needed a specialized anti-corruption agency in Ukraine that was called the National Anti-Corruption Bureau, or NABU. There was a different body that reviewed asset declarations for unusual wealth called National Anti-Corruption Prevention
Himes is going
Council.
Through what we just outlined
and eventually we
a couple
got
minutes
to
ago,
helping
which
them
is
establish
Donald Trump was not looking for
a
real anti-corruption
prosecutor.
He was looking for specific...
on anti-corruption, and that was to try to create investigators,
for
prosecutors,
deliverables.
Courts with integrity that couldn't be bought and would be focused on high-level corruption.
So what I'm hearing there, Mr. Kent, is a very comprehensive effort. So let me read you President Trump's own words to the Ukrainian president in their July 25th phone call, and I quote, "There's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that, so whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, so if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me." Mr. Kent, when you hear those words, do you hear the president participating in or requesting a thoughtful and well-calibrated anti-corruption program?
I do not.
And...
Well,
Mr. Kent and
maybe
and Mr.
take
Taylor,
your fingers out of your ears.
Everyone's a critic.
The defenders of the president's behavior have made a big deal out of the fact that Vice President Biden encouraged the Ukrainians to remove a corrupt former Ukrainian prosecutor, 2016, Mr. Shokin. And in fact, Senator Rand Paul on Sunday said, and I quote him, "They're impeaching the President Trump for exactly the same thing that Joe Biden did." Is that correct? Is what the president did in his phone call and what Joe Biden did in terms of Mr. Shokin, are those exactly the same things? And if not, how are they different?
I do not think they are the same things. What former Vice President Biden requested of former President of Ukraine Poroshenko was the removal of a corrupt Prosecutor General, Viktor Shokin, who had undermined a program of assistance that we had spent, again, U.S. taxpayer money to try to build an independent investigator unit to go after corrupt prosecutors. And there was a case called the Diamond Prosecutor case in which Shokin destroyed the entire ecosystem that we were trying to help create. The investigators, the judges who issued the warrants, the law enforcement that had warrants to do the wiretapping, everybody to protect his former driver whom he'd made a prosecutor. That's what Joe Biden was asking, remove the corrupt prosecutor.
So Joe Biden was participating in an open effort, established whole of government effort to address corruption in Ukraine.
That is correct.
Great. So, Mr. Kent, as you look at this whole mess, Rudy Giuliani, President Trump, in your opinion, was this a comprehensive and whole of government effort to end corruption in Ukraine?
Referring to the request in July?
Exactly.
I would not say so. No, sir.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think President Trump was trying to end corruption in Ukraine. I think he was trying to aim corruption in Ukraine at Vice President Biden and at the 2020 election. And I yield back the balance of my time.
Mr. Conaway is recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield my time to the gentleman from Texas, Mr. Ratcliffe.
I thank the gentleman, and I thank you both for being here. It's obvious from your testimony today that you both care a great deal about U.S.-Ukraine relations.
All right, folks, so we're going to hang into this for another one or two Congress people. But, you know, the caster dropped the ball. I mean, I think that is the, you know, even Ari Fleischer is now complaining about the Republican council. They're going to blame this guy. I do think Jim Jordan did a good job of conflating the idea of what Bill Taylor knew as the agenda and what Bill Taylor knew the Ukrainians knew about the agenda. Bill Taylor knew what President Trump was up to maybe before the Ukrainians did. But that doesn't in any way mean that what Trump wasn't doing was what he was not doing. Again, I've made this point before. I can fire a gun at you, attempting to kill you, and just because you're not aware that I'm firing at you doesn't mean that I'm not attempting to kill you. Let's listen.
Agreed with you. On October 10th, President Zelensky held a press marathon with over 300 reporters where he said repeatedly and consistently over hours and hours that he was not aware of a military hold during the July 25th call. In fact, in his official press release,
and this guy's doing the exact
Ukrainian
same thing
government
here.
Available on his website that I'll be introducing into the record, he said, "Our phone conversation bears no relations to arms. They blocked the provision of military assistance prior to our telephone conversation, but the issue had not been discussed during our conversation. I mean, I didn't even know." So now, in addition to confirming that because he had no knowledge of it, there was no quid pro quo involving military aid during that call, President Zelensky went on to confirm a number of things, that there was no pressure, that there were no conditions, that there were no threats on military aid. There were no conditions or pressure to investigate Burisma or the 2016 election, that there was no blackmail, that there was no corruption of any kind during the July 25th call. Again, from his official press release. Therefore, there was no blackmail because it was not the subject of our conversation with the President of the United States. There were no conditions on the investigation, either because of arms or the situation around Burisma Company. He told Reuters there was no blackmail. He told the LA Times there was no pressure or blackmail from the United States. He told Japan's Kyoto News, "I was never pressured and there were no conditions being imposed." He told ABC News and the BBC, "I'm against corruption. This is not corruption. It was just a call." The Ukrainian president stood in front of the world press and repeatedly, consistently, over and over again, interview after interview, said he had no knowledge of military aid being withheld, meaning no quid pro quo, no pressure, no demands, no threats, no blackmail, nothing corrupt. And unlike the first 45 minutes that we heard from the Democrats today, that's not secondhand information. It's not hearsay. It's not what someone overheard Ambassador Sondland say. That was his direct testimony. Ambassador Taylor, do you have any evidence to assert that President Zelensky was lying to the world press when he said those things? Yes or no?
Mr. Ratcliffe, if I can respond.
My time is short.
Your time
is short.
Yes or no? That's right. I have no reason to doubt what the president said in his
press. Okay, very good. So In this impeachment hearing today, where we impeach presidents for treason or bribery or other high crimes, where is the impeachable offense in that call? Are either of you here today to assert there was an impeachable offense in that call? Shout it out. Anyone?
Mr. Ratcliffe, if I can just respond, let me just reiterate that I'm not here.
I've got 1 minute left.
I know, I know you only got a minute left.
You asked the witness a question. The witness
I withdraw the question. Let me just make this point. I'm not here to take one side or the other.
That's your
Ambassador,
decision.
Let me answer this. Let me ask you this question. The general will suspend. Spend the time,
Ambassador Taylor, would you like to answer the question?
Suspend the time, please. I withdrew the question.
The gentleman will suspend. We will suspend the clock.
Suspend the clock and 1 minute, please.
Ambassador Taylor, would you like to respond to the question?
Mr. Ratcliffe, I would just like to say that I'm not here to do anything having to do with to decide about impeachment. That is not what either of us are here to do. This is your job.
Will you restore,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Restore time to the clock to 1 minute.
No, but you may continue 22 seconds.
Fine. Mr. Ambassador, I think everyone knows that House Democrats have made up their mind to impeach one president. The question that we've just learned is whether or not they're prepared to impeach two. Because to be clear, if House Democrats impeach President Trump for a quid pro quo involving military aid, they have to call President Zelensky a liar. If they impeach him for abusing his power or pressuring or making threats or demands, they have to call President Zelensky a liar to do it. If they impeach President Trump for blackmail or extortion or making threats or demand, they have to call President Trump a liar to do it.
What? Man, Zelensky.
I yield back.
Wait. Did he just say that the Democrats have to make the case that President Trump is a liar?
I yield a few minutes to my esteemed chairman.
Thank you. Ambassador Taylor,
good luck.
I don't know if you've had a chance to read some of the transcripts that have been released. Are you aware that other witnesses have testified that Ukraine, in fact, found out the aid was being withheld before it became public knowledge?
Mr. Chairman, I've read that. I think there's still some question about when they may have heard.
And ultimately, they did find out when the political story came out, to your knowledge, but others have said even sooner. But they did find out, right, Ambassador?
They did, Mr. Chairman.
And at the time they found out, they knew what President Trump wanted from them, that he wanted these investigations, correct?
Ambassador Sondland informed President Zelensky's staff, that is, Mr. Yermak, of what was required, yes.
So Ukraine finds out about the hold. You're not able to give them a reason for the hold. No one is able to give them a reason for the hold. They know the president wants these investigations. And then they're told in Warsaw by Ambassador Sondland, essentially, you're not getting the aid unless you do these investigations, correct?
That's correct.
So, you know, you've been asked, how could there be conditioning if the Ukrainians didn't know? But Ukrainians were told by Ambassador Sondland, were they not?
They were. They didn't know, as near as I can tell, the Ukrainians did not know about the hold on the phone call on July 25th. That's true. But they were told, as you said, Mr. Chairman, on the 1st of September.
And, in fact, while they may not have known during the time of the call, they would find out. And when they did find out, they would know what the president wanted, correct?
That's correct.
Representative Sewell.
So, Mr. Kent, I'd like to refer you to the discussion of the May 23rd meeting in the Oval Office. When the president met with those who had gone to the Ukraine for the inauguration, you briefly testified that you helped propose names for individuals to go to that inauguration. Was Ambassador Sondland, who was ambassador to the European Union, one of the names that you submitted?
No, it was not.
But he ultimately attended that inauguration. Is that not right?
That is correct.
And do you know how he ended up as a part of that official delegation?
I do not know for sure, but my understanding is once the list left the NSC staff, it went through a review through the part of the White House that determines presidential delegations.
You also testified that upon returning, Ambassador Sondland used his, quote, connections with Mulvaney end quote, to order in order to secure this meeting in the Oval Office. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, yes.
It seems that this Oval Office meeting was a pivotal turning point in the Ukraine policy. Coming out of that meeting, who was given responsibility, to your recollection, who was given responsibility for the Ukraine policy?
I never saw any document that changed the nature of policy determination. In the U.S. government under the Trump administration, there's the National Security Presidential Memorandum.
Didn't you also say, have a little time, you did say in your testimony that you felt that you testified that Secretary Perry, Ambassador Sunderland, and Ambassador Volker, quote, felt that they had a mandate to take the lead, end quote, on Ukraine policy. Did you not?
That was an accurate statement. Their feeling doesn't mean that they actually got delegated responsibility.
Have you ever heard the term three amigos?
I referenced that after watching Gordon Sondland say that on Ukrainian TV on July 26.
And what do you come to mean by three amigos?
My understanding of Ambassador Sondland's use of that term is that the three people that were in charge of Ukraine policy during the summer were he, Gordon Sondland, Ambassador Volker, and Secretary Perry.
What did you when did you come to learn about Mr. Giuliani's role, and what do you consider his role to have been?
I first heard about former Mayor Giuliani's interest in Ukraine in January of this year. That was a different phase than what happened during the summertime.
Was it normal to have a person who is a private citizen take an active role in foreign diplomacy?
I did not find his particular engagement normal, no.
Now, Mr. Ambassador Taylor, you testified that there are two channels, a regular and irregular. What did you see as Rudy Giuliani's role in Ukraine policy?
Congresswoman, I came to see that Mr. Giuliani had a large influence on the irregular channel.
And was that normal? Is that normal to have a private citizen of the United States take an active role in diplomacy?
It is not normal. It is not unusual to ask for people outside the government to give opinions to help form the policies of the U.S. government. It is unusual to have a person put input into the channel that goes contrary to U.S. policy.
Thank you. I yield back.
Mr. Turner, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you. Mr. Kent, Ambassador Taylor, thank you for your service. I have a great deal of appreciation for your profession. You have very little direct contact with decision makers, a tremendous amount of responsibility, and not a lot of authority to affect U.S. policy, bilateral engagements or multilateral engagements. You're trying to shepherd through issues with our allies. One example of that, Ambassador Taylor, is that you testified in your prior testimony that you have not had any contact with the President of the United States. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Ms. Taylor, Mr. Kent, have you had any contact with the President of the United States?
I have not.
So not only no conversations with the President of the United States about Ukraine, you've not had any contact with the President of the United States, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So you both know that this impeachment inquiry is about the President of the United States, don't you? I mean, the man that neither one of you have had any contact with, you're the first up witnesses. I just find that a little amazing that the first up would be two people who've never had any contact with the president himself. Now, Kurt Volker did have contact with the president and contact with the president on Ukraine. Mr. Ambassador Taylor, you said that he's a man of highest integrity. Well, I know Kurt Volker, and I know, you know, he served as the NATO ambassador. He served as the director of the McCain Institute. He's the highest professional ethics, one of the most knowledgeable people about Europe. He's absolutely a truthful man. Mr. Kent, would you agree with Ambassador Taylor that he's of the highest integrity?
I believe Kurt Volker has served the U.S. as a public servant very well.
Do either of you have any evidence that Mr. Volker committed perjury or lied to this committee in his testimony to this committee? Do either of you have any evidence that Kurt Volker perjured himself or lied to this committee in his testimony? Ambassador Taylor, any evidence?
Mr. Turner, I have no evidence.
Ms. Kent?
I believe Ambassador Volker's deposition was over 400 pages, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't make a judgment.
But you have no evidence that he lied or perjured himself,
I have no
correct,
basis
Kent?
To make that judgment, no,
great.
Sir.
Well, we're not in a court, gentlemen. And if we were, the Sixth Amendment would apply, and so would rules on hearsay and opinion. And most of your two testimonies would not be admissible whatsoever. But I understand in your profession you deal in words of understanding, words of beliefs and feelings, because in your profession, that's
feelings,
what you work with to
facts.
Try to pull together policy
feelings, right?
And to go in and out of meetings to try to formulate opinions that affect other people's decision-making.
Right.
Ambassador Taylor, have you ever prepared for a meeting with a president or a prime minister of a country, or were you told one thing before you went into the meeting as to what it was to be about, and the meeting be about another thing? Or you get in there and the beliefs or opinions of the president or the prime minister were other than you believed?
Mr. Turner, you're asking if I ever learned something new in a meeting?
Have you ever
meeting?
Walked in with a belief that you thought about the country that you were serving in and find out that they were wrong?
I learn something in every meeting, Mr. Turner, but I, you know.
Well, Ambassador Taylor, the reason why the Sixth Amendment doesn't allow hearsay is because it's unreliable. It's unreliable because frequently it's untruthful. It is not factual. It might be beliefs or understandings. Ambassador, you testified about a number of things that you heard. Isn't it possible that the things that you heard were not true, that some of the beliefs and understandings that you had are not accurate, that in fact you're mistaken about some of the things that you testified today on a factual basis?
This is the first time they're actually
assessment.
Going to impeach,
Mr.
try and impeach
I'm
the
I'm here to tell you what I know. I'm not going to tell you anything I don't know. I'm going to tell you everything that I do know.
But since you learned it from others,
that's exactly why I'm here.
But since you learned it from others, you could be wrong, correct?
I am telling you what I heard them tell me.
And they could be wrong, or they could be mistaken, or they could have heard it incorrectly. Right, Ambassador Taylor?
People make mistakes.
Right. So you could be wrong. I yield the rest of my time to Mr. Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for yielding. Ambassador Taylor, the gentleman asked if you could be wrong. Were you wrong when you said you had a clear understanding that President Zelensky had to commit to an investigation of Biden's before the aide got released, and the aide got released and he didn't commit to an investigation?
Mr. I was not wrong about what I told you, which is what I heard. That's all I've said. I've told you what I heard.
And that's the point. What you
that's
heard did not happen. It didn't happen. You had three meetings with the guy. He could have told you. He didn't announce he was going to do an investigation before the aide happened. It's not just could it have been wrong. The fact is it was wrong because it didn't happen. The whole point was you had a clear understanding that aid will not get released unless there's a commitment. Not maybe, not I think the aid might happen, and it's my hunch it's going to get released. You use clear language, clear understanding and commitment, and those two things didn't happen, so you had to be wrong.
Ms. Jordan, the other thing that went on when that assistance was on hold is we shook the confidence of a close partner in our reliability. And that's
not what this proceeding's about, Ambassador Taylor.
Has expired. Ambassador
that's
Taylor,
not what this whole thing started on.
The time of the gentleman has expired. Ambassador Taylor, did you want to finish your answer?
No, that's good, Mr. Chairman.
I now recognize Mr. Carson for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman. I yield to the chairman.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. I just want to follow up on some of the earlier questions about President Zelensky's statements after this scandal came to light, when he was asked, you know, were you pressured, how'd the phone call go, et cetera. Ukrainians, Mr. Kent, are pretty sophisticated about U.S. politics, are they not?
Perhaps.
You would agree that if President Zelensky contradicted President Trump and said, of course I felt pressured, they were holding up $400 million in military assistance, we have people dying every day, if he were to contradict President Trump directly, they would be sophisticated enough to know they may pay a very heavy price with this president, were they not?
That's a fair assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And President Zelensky not only had to worry about retribution from Donald Trump should he contradict Donald Trump publicly, he also has to worry about how he's perceived domestically, doesn't he, Ambassador Taylor?
President Zelensky is very sensitive to the views of Ukrainian people, who indeed are very attentive to Ukrainian-U.S. politics, yes.
And so if President Zelensky were to say, I had to capitulate and agree to these investigations, I was ready to go on CNN until the aid got restored, that would obviously be hurtful to him back home, would it not?
He cannot afford to be seen to be deferring to any foreign leader. He is very confident in his own abilities, and he knows that the Ukrainian people expect him to be clear and defend Ukrainian interests.
Mr. Carson.
Thank you, Chairman. My colleague touched briefly on the campaign to remove career diplomat Ambassador Yovanovitch. Mr. Kent, you stated in previous testimony that you were aware of the, quote, campaign of slander against the ambassador in real time, which basically unfolded in the media. Where do you understand this misinformation campaign was coming from, and who was essentially perpetuating it?
To my understanding, the then Prosecutor General of Ukraine, now ex, Yuri Lutsenko, met Rudy Giuliani in New York on a private visit in January. They had a second meeting in February, and through the good offices of the former mayor of New York, Yuri Lutsenko gave an interview to John Solomon, then of The Hill, in early March, and the campaign was launched on March 20th.
A corrupt Ukrainian prosecutor gave an interview to a reporter in the United States and made claims that the ambassador provided officials with a, quote, do not prosecute list. Sir, do you have any reason to believe this is true?
I have every reason to believe it is not true.
What was the reputation of the man who made these allegations, sir?
Yuri Lutsenko was a politician of long standing. He had been Minister of Interior after the Orange Revolution. The U.S. Embassy had good relations with him for years. He was imprisoned by President Yanukovych, came out, was elected majority leader of Poroshenko, the then president's party, and then became prosecutor general in the spring of 2016.
What was your experience with Ambassador Yovanovitch? Was she working hard to combat corruption in Ukraine, sir?
She was dedicated, as is every U.S. government official in Ukraine, to help Ukrainians overcome the legacy of corruption, which they actually have made a number of important steps since 2014.
So, in fact, before all of this happened, you and your superiors at the State Department asked the ambassador to extend her time in the Ukraine, correct, sir?
That is correct.
Did you support her extension?
I asked her to extend until the end of this year to get through the election cycle in Ukraine, and then Undersecretary Hale in March asked her to stay until 2020.
Now, some in Ukraine probably disliked her efforts to help Ukraine root out corruption. Is that correct?
As I mentioned in my testimony, you can't promote principled anti-corruption action without pissing off corrupt people.
Fair enough. Now, some of those people helped Giuliani smear her, did they not?
They did.
So ultimately, that smear campaign pushed President Trump to remove her, correct, sir?
I cannot judge that. What I can say is that Rudy Giuliani's smear campaign was ubiquitous in the spring of 2019 on Fox News and on the Internet and Twitter sphere.
So Ambassador Taylor and Mr. Kent, in all of your combined decades at the State Department, have you ever before seen an instance where an ambassador was forced out by the president following a smear campaign of misinformation orchestrated by the president's allies?
I have not.
Nor I.
Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Dr. Wenstrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Taylor, this should be easy because I'm going to use a lot of your words from the previous deposition as we go forward. In your deposition, you spoke of support for Ukraine and its relationship to the United States and how much you support that. In 2014, you, and I'm quoting this, urged Obama administration to provide lethal defensive weapons in order to deter further Russian aggression. Did the Obama administration provide lethal weapons?
No, sir.
They provided MREs and blankets and things like that. In your deposition, you also said President Obama's objection was because it might provoke the Russians. And in fact, you testified in your deposition that the Obama administration didn't have a good argument since Russia had already provoked and they have invaded Ukraine. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
It's a shame he didn't take the advice of a combat veteran like you, sir. Someone who understands what deterrence provides, because a lot of Ukrainian lives could have been saved if he had taken your advice. In your deposition, you said, and I quote, happy, you were happy with Trump administration's assistance, and it provided both lethal and financial aid, did it not?
It did, sir.
And you also stated that it was a substantial improvement. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
So now we're providing javelins, which kill Russian tanks. MREs and blankets do not do that. Today you said, I was beginning to fear that the longstanding U.S. policy of strong support for Ukraine was shifting. I have a little trouble with longstanding based on what we just talked about, because it wasn't really longstanding strong support. It seems to me the strong support came with this administration. Would you agree with that, sir? Unless you consider MREs and blankets strong support, I wouldn't call it longstanding.
The longstanding that I'm referring to there, Dr. Winstrup, is the longstanding political support, economic support, and increasing military support.
Well, certainly that strong support came from Congress, but it didn't come from the previous administration as compared to what this administration has decided to do. The strong support came with this administration, not the Obama administration. And maybe now we understand what President Obama meant when he told Russian President Medvedev that he'd have more flexibility after his election. Maybe that flexibility was to deny lethal aid to the Ukraine, allowing Russia to march right in and kill Ukrainians. Again, in your deposition, you urged the Obama administration officials to provide lethal defensive weapons to Ukraine in order to deter further Russian aggression. And now they have that under this administration, don't they, Mr. Ambassador?
They have the javelins, yes, sir.
Thank you. And I would like to yield the remainder of my time to Mr. Ratcliffe.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. So, no pressure, no demands, no conditions, nothing corrupt, nothing on the call. That's what we heard President Zelensky say. And because House Democrats' charges against President Trump have been publicly, repeatedly, consistently been denied by President Zelensky, you heard the defense now from Chairman Schiff. He's lying because he has to. He has to lie because the threats, the demands, the blackmail, the extortion that House Democrats are alleging, if he didn't do that, he couldn't possibly risk military aid. He would have to do anything he had to secure it. The problem with that, the hole in that argument, is you have to ask yourself, what did President Zelensky actually do to get the aid? The answer is nothing. He did nothing. He didn't open any investigations. He didn't call Attorney General Bill Barr. He didn't do any of the things that House Democrats say that he was being forced and coerced and threatened to do. He didn't do anything because he didn't have to. I yield back.
Ms. Speier, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you both for your true heroic efforts, both today and also throughout your careers. I'd like to start with you, Mr. Kent. In your testimony, you said that you had, in mid-August, it became clear to me that Giuliani's efforts to gin up politically motivated investigations we're now infecting U.S. engagement with Ukraine, leveraging President Zelensky's desire for a White House meeting. Mr. Kent, did you actually write a memo documenting your concerns that there was an effort underway to pressure Ukraine to open an investigation to benefit President Trump?
Yes, ma'am. I wrote a memo to the file on August 16th.
But we don't have access to that memo, do we?
I submitted it to the State Department subject to the September 27th subpoena.
And we have not received one
make a note of that
piece of paper from the State Department.
So contemporaneously, George Kent wrote that this was going on to the State Department. The State Department will not release the documents to the committee.
The importance of Ukraine
to indicate that Kent thought that at that time.
The benefit that it has to the United States national security. And our goal to continue to support sovereignty of nations. Meanwhile, Russia is violently attacking people in Ukraine in the Donbas area. So withholding military aid, does that weaken Ukraine?
Well, I think it sends the wrong signal, and it did for a short period of time. Again, the assistance from the FY19 was released and is in the process of heading towards Ukraine.
Does it embolden Russia when there was no aid being sent to Ukraine?
I think the signal that there is controversy and question about the U.S. support of Ukraine sends the signal to Vladimir Putin that he can leverage that as he seeks to negotiate with not only Ukraine but other countries.
Thank you. Ambassador Taylor, I think you mentioned that a White House meeting for Zelensky would boost his ability to negotiate for a peaceful settlement with Vladimir Putin and Russia in general. Is that true?
Ms. Speer, it is certainly true that that U.S. support for Mr. Zelensky, President Zelensky, in his negotiations with Russians is very important and will enable him to get a better agreement with that support from the United States, both from the military assistance, but also just from the political assistance that we can provide.
But he has not yet had that White House meeting, has he?
He has not.
I think it's ironic that Soviet-born Lev Parnas, who has now been indicted, had a meeting with the president in the White House after participating in a number of campaign events for the president and contributing $325,000 to the president's PAC.
Good deal.
So maybe it's actually the requirement that you give money to the president's PAC in order to get that meeting at the White House.
Yes.
Ambassador Taylor, is it true that the prosecutor general now has opened an investigation in Ukraine?
Ms. Speer, the new prosecutor general that President Zelensky has appointed is indeed investigating crimes in general. Is that your question?
Yes.
But yes, he is in office and is investigating criminal activity.
Has he specified what investigations he's undertaken?
No.
He has not. All right. I yield the rest of my time to Chairman Schiff.
Just a quick question. A couple of my colleagues referenced the conversation, the hot mic conversation between President Obama and President Medvedev. That was in 2012. There's a suggestion that he was saying he was going to go easy on Russia over the invasion of Ukraine, but that invasion took place 2 years after that conversation. You don't have any reason to believe that President Obama was referring to going easy on Russia for an invasion that hadn't happened yet, do you?
Mr. Chairman, I have no knowledge of what was in...
It was more or less a rhetorical question. I will yield now to Mr. Stewart, or I'm sorry, Mr. Stewart.
Yep. Thank you. To the witnesses, thank you. Time is precious, so I'm going to go very, very quickly. Welcome, I think, to year four of the ongoing impeachment of President Trump. I'm sorry that you have been dragged into this. I think the sign behind me says it very well. By the whistleblower's attorney, the coup has started and impeachment will follow. But after listening for what is going on now 4 hours and 21 minutes, after all of the secret hearings, after all of the leaks, after hearing witnesses such as yourselves give your opinions, it really comes down to this. One thing it comes down to. This is the transcript that the president has released of this phone call. There is one sentence, one phone call. That is what this entire impeachment proceeding is based upon. And I got to tell you, if your impeachment case is so weak that you have to lie and exaggerate about it to convince the American people that they need to remove this president, then you've got a problem. And the American people have been lied to again and again on this. We first heard a lot about quid pro quo. And then many people realized that was meaningless. So they said, well, let's go for the fences then. Let's talk about extortion. Let's talk about bribery. Let's talk about cover-up
and
obstruction.
That's what quid pro
quo is.
For
which there is zero evidence of any of that. We heard a characterization of the president's phone call that was so outrageously inaccurate, it had to be described as a parody. And none of those things matter. None of it matters. It comes down to this. We appreciate your insight, we appreciate your opinion, but all you can do is give your opinion of this one phone call. Let me ask you, gentlemen, both of you have said here today, you have testified, corruption in Ukraine is endemic. Would we agree on that? Simple question. problem is, isn't it?
It's a problem, and they're taking steps to address it.
Okay. Earlier in the hearing, both of you said use the word endemic or agreed to it. It's in the courts. It's oligarchs. It's prosecutors. It's everywhere. And I think we can also agree that that's not the only place in the world where we experience and see corruption. There's dozens and dozens of nations around the world that are steeped in corruption. Would you agree with that?
Mr. I would say that there's corruption in every country, including ours.
Okay, thank you. And some were clearly more concerned about than others. So in these corrupt nations, of which there are probably hundreds of corrupt individuals, hundreds of corrupt government officials, can you give me an example any time where the Vice President of the United States shows up and demands that a specific prosecutor be fired and gives them a six-hour time limit to do that? Are you aware of that ever happening any other place? I guess the answer is no. And I just think it's interesting that out of hundreds of corrupt individuals, dozens of corrupt nations, that happened one time. And it happened with the individual whose son was being paid by the organization that was under investigation. One other thing very quickly. If someone was a candidate for a political office, even for President of the United States, should they be immune from investigation?
No one is above the law, sir.
Thank you. I agree with that. I think we all would agree with that. And yet I think some presume that because some of the individuals we're talking about here were candidates, that they are immune from any questions or any investigation. I think it's absurd. For heaven's sakes, if those of us in public office, those of us who have find ourselves up for re-election or all the time as a candidate, I think
now,
we have
a
higher standard.
Can we get back to nobody's above the law?
These types of questions. The last thing, then I'm going to yield my time. Availability of funds. I'm quoting from the NDAA in 2019. The language is specific. Availability of funds under assistance to the Ukraine, it has to be certified. And what has to be certified? Quote, for the purposes of decreasing corruption. Are you surprised that there would be questions about corruption in Ukraine and that it would be discussed withholding some of this aid that's actually required by law that it be withheld if they can't?
All right, folks, we're going to hang in there for about another 10 minutes, and then we got to go. We're going to continue to play here. Now, that corruption, of course, Donald Trump lied as to what was holding back this stuff. If you're talking about corruption, you could have easily done that publicly or at least internally not lied about it.
Questions about corruption that have not been addressed. I'm going to yield my rest of my time to Mr. Jordan. Sorry. 18 seconds. You're going to let that go? Thank you. In that case,
you're
going to
let that go, Jim?
Back. Thank you.
It's a good question for him.
Mr. Quigley. So that certification, that took place in May. Is that correct, Mr. Kent?
I do not believe it was certified by May. I would defer to my colleague, Gloria Cooper, who's testified on closed door.
But it was an earlier time.
It had not been done by May because when I was visiting in May, I was asked by Laura to raise a specific issue that would meet the conditionality.
But the DOD did say that they met the certification.
Yes, sir. I think it may have been in the July timeframe.
Thank you. So it's interesting and curious that we're talking about hearsay evidence. It is extraordinary to me that the committee's been able to get as much information as they had, direct or hearsay, given the obstruction. You gentlemen were both asked by the State Department not to appear for your depositions. Is that correct?
We both received, I believe, I received initially a letter directing me not to appear. And once the committees issued a subpoena, I was under legal obligation to appear, and I am here today under subpoena.
Ambassador, were you also asked not to be part of the deposition?
Mr. Quigley, I was told by the State Department, don't appear under these circumstances. That was in the letter to me. And when I got the subpoena, exactly as Mr. Kent said, that was different circumstances and obeyed a legal subpoena. So that, yes, sir, I'm here for that reason.
Absolutely. But we were not able to hear testimony by Chief of Staff Mulvaney, John Eisenberg, Michael Ellis, John Bolton, more than a dozen witnesses. So I suspect if you have a problem with hearsay, you'd have a lot more direct testimony and direct evidence if you weren't blocking that ability. You'd have a lot more documents that you referred to with my colleague's questions that have not yet been turned over by state or any other agency. Is that correct to your knowledge, gentlemen?
We're both here under subpoena. I don't think either of us is going to comment why others have not shown up.
But has any of the documents that you turned over, to your knowledge, been turned over to the committee?
No.
Mr. Kent, following the July 25th call and through the first 2 weeks of August, were you involved in any efforts to arrange for President Zelensky to make a statement announcing the two investigations that the President, President Trump, had talked about in the July 25th call?
I was not, and I would never participate in an arrangement to have them announce investigations.
Ambassador Taylor, were you involved in any such efforts?
No, sir.
I want to show you a text of the exchange. This one's between Ambassador Volker and Andrei Yermak, the same aide to Zelensky that Volker texted before the July 25th call. You weren't involved with it, so I'll read it. The first text is from August 10th. Ambassador Volker text, I agree with your approach. Let's iron out the statement and use that to get date and Prez can go forward with it. Then at 5:42, Mr. Yermak responds, once we have a date, we'll call for a press briefing announcing upcoming visit and outlining vision for a reboot of U.S.-Ukraine relationship, including, among other things, Burisma and election meddling investigations. Andrei Yermak says that once we have a date, they will announce the investigations in Burisma and election meddling. Mr. Kent, are these the same two investigations President Trump asked the Ukrainian president to initiate in the July 25th meeting, 25th call?
Those appear to be the same issues that were mentioned in the call, as well as the media campaign that started in March, led by Rudy Giuliani.
Mr. Kent, as the day-to-day State Department point person in Washington on Ukraine policy, were you aware of this effort to persuade President Zelensky to issue a statement in order to get a White House meeting while they were happening?
When this exchange happened on August 10th, I was not.
When did you learn about them?
As Ambassador Taylor referenced earlier in his testimony in oral answering, he heard on August 16th, he then called me and we had a conversation. And at that point, I memorialized my concerns in a note to the file.
Ambassador Taylor, as the point person on the ground in Ukraine, were you aware of this effort to get Ukraine to issue this written statement in early August?
Not the written statement, no, sir.
So the entire discussion about a public statement about the two investigations President Trump wanted was done in what you have described as an irregular channel involving Ambassadors Sondland and Volker, and they tasked to take on Ukraine policy by the president. Isn't that correct, Mr. Kent?
That would be my understanding.
Ambassador?
The same.
And if... I guess to close, primer on hearsay, I think the American public needs to be reminded that countless people have been convicted on hearsay because the courts have routinely allowed and created needed exceptions to hearsay. Hearsay can be much better evidence than direct, as we have learned in
All right, folks, we're going to have to wrap up. We've been doing I've been sitting here for 4.5 hours. Let it run, though, and just keep it up, as we say.
You've been sitting here for 5.5.
5.5?
Yep. It's 2:30. We start at 10.
Yeah, that's 4.5 hours.
Oh, my math's bad, I guess. Oh, God.
Here, let it keep running. I just want to see what's happening here.
Mr. Kent and Ambassador Taylor, you both spoke eloquently and Stefanik, passionately she's... about the need to support Ukraine to counter Russia.
Where's the 21st district in New York?
Very critical time. I think it's like Buffalo-ish or somewhere up there, maybe.
The Trump administration has indeed provided substantial aid to Ukraine in the form of defensive lethal aid, correct?
Okay, so the argument, I mean, they're going to continue to make the
and
same argument.
And that is more so than the Obama administration, correct?
That they did, that Trump did more than Obama, and they're still not dealing with the...
it's not relevant at all.
It's not relevant. We will do a wrap up tomorrow as well. We'll play some clips tomorrow. It's going to be early. Oh, first off, let me just address this too. While you're here, give the give a couple of thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. If enough of you do, then I will address the question as to whether I wash my hands on the various times I went to the bathroom. It seemed to be an issue in the chat room. All right, so let me just make that clear.
Don't let the chat know that you're monitoring it. That's a bad.
No, well, I generally don't. But when we do something like this, when we're doing a hearing like this, I do check in on it time to time. I rarely go into the chat, but only when I get word that there is some concern about my hygiene practices. Tomorrow, we are going to start the show early, around 11:30, because I have a prior commitment and did not realize that Michael will be out of town at this time. And so we got to start it early. We're going to have an interview. We're actually, it's going to be flipped. The fun half is going to come first. It's going to be basically like... Right.
When you hunt hard, you eat your dessert first, is what my dad used to tell me.
When you hunt hard, you eat your dessert first?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
You must be hunting pretty hard then with all the candy. What does that mean, hunt hard?
If you've had a good day at hunting, when you get back to camp, you get to eat the dessert first.
Is that right?
I mean, you can do whatever you want when you're hunting.
But why can't you just have dessert first on days that you're not hunting?
Because then you feel guilty about it. Then you just feel like a slob, but you were out there in the field, so you got working off some calories.
There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people who just feel guilty about the hunting.
No, I mean, I don't know about that.
But what about like on days where you go out and like you dug a ditch or you chop some wood?
I would say working hard generally could probably apply.
Is that why you eat candy for breakfast, Matt?
Yeah, because I hunt in the mornings in Prospect Park.
It's really disturbing when Matt comes in first thing in the morning. There's literally blood dripping down from his thing, and he's caught some squirrels. And then he goes and has a bag of Reese's, and that's the way.
It's a proud tradition of his people.
Right. So we will be a little bit early tomorrow. I don't think there's anything else sort of like devastating that's going to come out of the rest of these hearings. To the extent that there is, we will talk about them tomorrow. But the look, the audience, there's multiple audiences for what we saw today. I think Jim Jordan will get his, will be on Hannity tonight. He'll come in, he'll talk about it. Nunes will go on Fox. He will talk about it. They will be able to maintain these two different narratives. But there is, I think, little doubt in terms of the broad conventional wisdom. And this is relevant because this is the part that's going to box in those Republican senators. I will reiterate the exact same thing I've been saying over and over again. Impeachment, to the extent that it has any material implications to our politics, I think is most likely to manifest itself in 5 to 7 Senate races across the country, and then maybe other House races. But it is how closely are you stuck to Donald Trump as a candidate running for re-election? When Democrats nationalize elections, that's when they win. That's how they took the House in 2006. It was corruption at that time, partially the Iraq War. But this is going to be another way in to do that, where every single local federal race is going to be a function of their relationship with Donald Trump. There'll be other issues as well, of course, but this is going to be one that's going to be very easy. There's going to be a shorthand to pronounce it. And so this, I think it makes it much harder for the Republicans to step away with that because it's quite clear. Now, I'm also not convinced that we're done. John Bolton's still out there. Who knows? They're going to have to wait until November, or I guess this weekend, they're adding a couple more closed depositions, and they'll probably bring these people public, which means that that's going to have to add another couple of days. Nancy Pelosi wants to get this vote taken by Christmas. That may happen. It's going to mess up Bernie and Warren in the Senate, potentially. But we will talk about this. We have a couple of days to go to talk about it more. Again, thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Your membership makes this show possible. Please subscribe and like on this. And check out The Antifada, patreon.com, The Antifada.
This
and
week we've got Trailbillies.
Trailbillies are finally here. And Matt, check out Literary Hangover, patreon.com/literary hangover. We got to jump. We will talk to you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice was made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the rope that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101.